Sunday night, we'll read the same verses, John chapter 13, verses 1 through 17. Sunday night, we emphasized the washing. Tonight, we want to emphasize another point. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour was come, speaking of the cross, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things unto his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper, laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and taken his garments, and was sat down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, Well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye ought also to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If thou know these things that the Lord has shown them, happy are ye if you do them. Again, John chapter 13 is one of the most instructive incidents in the Word of God. There are several places where emphasis can be laid, many, many valuable lessons. But in these verses, Jesus, of course, is seen washing the feet of the apostles, which is something that ought to immediately arouse our interest. For Jesus Christ to wash the feet of anyone certainly ought to fascinate us. What Jesus did is here in our text is only recorded by John. That in no way detracts from its immense importance. In fact, John was the only one to record several things about Jesus. But Jesus here washed the feet of the apostles. And in doing so, he presented an object lesson for them and for us. Really, what we have here in John chapter 13, it's almost like an acted out parable. Christ, in washing the dirty feet of the apostles, is presenting an object lesson about being a humble servant. And we want to speak this evening on Christ's object lesson about being a servant. And what Christ illustrated here by his actions that evening, he called upon them to imitate, verses 12 through 16, and he also informed them that that this is where real happiness is found. He stated that in verse 17. But before we get into our text, there's several things that we need to realize and always remember. Some principles about Christ as a servant. Principle number one is Jesus is the perfect servant. He is the perfect servant of God. He is the perfect servant of man. All through the Word of God, you and I are called upon, everyone is called upon to serve God. We're all called to serve the Lord. Jesus Christ is the one and only perfect servant of God. We are also called upon to serve one another. Notice in Galatians 5, verse 13, it says, by love, serve one another. By love, serve one another. That's the last part of the verse. But notice, to do so, we must overcome the flesh. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but, contrast, we're not to use our liberty to advance the flesh, but by love serve one another. If we're going to serve God, we have to overcome the flesh. If we're going to serve one another, we have to overcome the flesh. Jesus Christ, being the perfect servant, he is our example. He is our pattern. He is our model, both to service to God and service to man. Secondly, Jesus knew that he was here on the Father's business. The very first words recorded, not the first words that he ever spoke to Joseph and Mary, but the first recorded words spoken to Joseph and Mary in Luke chapter 2 and verse 49, he said, wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? I must be about my Father's business. When he entered his public ministry, he said in John 4 and verse 34, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. So he knew that he was here to do a work. And it was not just a random work. It was a specified work. It was a prescribed work. It was a very definite work. And certainly it was a necessary work that he must do. He knew that he was here on God's business. And he was absolutely obsessed with that fact, that he is here to do the work of God, that he is here to do the Father's business. And may we realize and remember, it is God's business. It's not our business. It's God's business. And if it's God's business, it must be done within the bounds of his will. And may we live in awareness that we are here. We are here on God's business. That is why we are on this earth. That is why God has permitted us to live as long as he has. We are here on God's business. We must never, ever lose track of that. Everything else is a side issue. Everything. Doesn't matter what it is. Everything else is a side issue. We are here on God's business. And we're to be obsessed with that fact, that we are here on God's business. When we wake up in the morning, the reason God awakes us is to do His business. If we continue through the day, the reason God gives us breath, again, is to do His business. We must always remember that. We'll never be a true servant until we come to that realization. His business is not a sideline. Everything else is a sideline. His business is primary. That's the problem today. His business is a sideline, and more and more and more and more things are getting put in front of His business until pretty soon it's not being done at all. So this is primary. We are here to do His business. Thirdly, His main concern in doing the work that God had given him is declared in his prayer in John 17. In verse 1, he said, "Glorify thy Son," this is what he's praying, "that," or for this reason, "glorify me for this reason, that thy Son may glorify thee." That was his concern. The motivation, the passion of Christ's life upon earth was to glorify, that means to exalt, to honor, and to draw attention to God. That was his passion. We are here in the Father's business. Jesus Christ is our model. He is our example. He is our pattern. We are here on the Father's business, and we are to do His business for one reason, and that is to glorify Him. That is to draw attention to Him, to exalt Him, to honor Him. It is never to exalt self. It is never to honor self. It is never to draw attention to self. It is to glorify Him. This was His desire. He, of course, perfectly fulfilled it. This was His determination. This was His resolve to glorify God. And He, and He only, lived entirely and exclusively for the glory of the Father. He's the only one who ever has, only one who ever will. Lived exclusively for God the Father. At all times, in all places, under all circumstances. This was His desire. This was His passion. To glorify God, to do God's business, and to bring God glory in doing so. This was His supreme object of life. Fourthly, He was set apart for God's work. Also in John 17, verse 19, Jesus, again, this is part of His prayer, right before His arrest and crucifixion. He said there in John 17 and 19, "I sanctify, I set apart myself." Now, the extent and the degree of this setting part is found in the word myself. I sanctify myself. It's not I sanctify a part of the day. I sanctify some of my time. It is I sanctify, I set apart myself. He is our example. My total self, all that I am in and of myself, Jesus Christ says, I have set apart. That is, myself is dedicated and consecrated to His service. His was, of course, a complete devotion. A complete devotion of Himself. himself. I sanctify myself to do the Father's business for his glory. What those words mean, I sanctify myself, simply means he held nothing back. He's the only one who can truly say, who can look back on his entire life and say, I held nothing back from God. Nothing. I held nothing back from the Father's business. There isn't a human being alive that can say that. But Jesus Christ is our example. He's the pattern that we are to strive for. Fifthly, we see on a few different occasions, and just prior to our text, Christ gave instruction to his own concerning service. And in doing so, he revealed some principles as well. Notice in Matthew chapter 20, Matthew chapter 20, verse 26 through verse 28. But it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister or your servant. That is just the opposite of human thinking. If you want to be great, you be the servant. The world doesn't think that way. The world looks upon individuals that consider individuals the greatest who have those serving them. But Jesus said, if you want to be great, you be the servant. You be the servant. And whosoever will be chief among him, among you, let him, that is, the one who wants to be chief, be your servant. And then he uses the example of himself. Even as, again, he's the perfect servant. He's our pattern. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto. He said, I did not come into the world to be ministered unto. But I came to minister. I came to serve. Jesus Christ, God Himself, came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. Again, even as. He's our pattern. He's what we're to strive for. Then notice what it says. And to give his life. Remember, I sanctify myself. Myself. I come to minister, to serve, and to give his life. Service requires life. It requires our life. But notice, to give his life a ransom for many. So he came to give his life for. Now what he's revealing here is, concerning service, if we are going to serve, there has to be a change in our mind, in the human mindset. Because man does not think this way. Man does not think this way. To be great, to be the chief, I must have servants. That's the way man thinks. And the more servants I have, the greater I am. The more authority I have, the greater I am. But Jesus says, minister or serve. So our mindset has to change. If we're going to truly serve God, if we're going to truly serve one another, there has to be a change in the mindset. Also, Jesus teaches here that one must have the purpose of serving. He said, I came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. That is my purpose. What is our purpose? Our purpose, as we've already said, is God's business. Our purpose is to serve. That must be our purpose. To serve. To serve God, first and foremost. To serve one another. Truth is, if we serve God, we'll serve one another. But we see something else that he reveals here. We must be willing to give our life in service. We must be willing to give our life. Again, we sang the song, Go With Him All the Way. You and I don't even know what all the way is. We don't know what that involves. But we are to go with Him all the way. And it's easy to sing and it's easy to say, I'll go with Him all the way. And we don't even go with Him all the way through a day. But we see here that we must be willing to give our life in serving. Not only in serving God, but in serving one another. Then notice some more instruction in Luke chapter 17. Jesus speaks a parable. We'll not get into the parable for time's sake. But in verse 7, he says, But which of you, having a servant, plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by when he has come from the field, he's done feeding the cattle, how many of you are going to say, go, sit down to meat, take it easy? And will not rather say unto him, make ready, wherewith I may sup, and gird myself, and serve me, until I have eaten and drunken. And afterward, thou shalt eat and drink. Afterward, thou shalt for yourself. After you've done everything else, then you take care of yourself, is what was expected of this servant. He was to be willing to have one thing piled upon him on top of another. Verse 9, doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things, and none of us have yet, and we're not going to, have done all those things which are commanded you. You know, when we do the very things that are commanded us, I dare say that there's more that we haven't done that he's commanded us. But let's say you did everything that he commanded you to do. We are unprofitable servants, for we have done that which was our duty to do. What is our duty to God? To give everything. To be entirely set apart for him. That is our duty. There is not a one of us that has ever come close to being in danger, to even come close to giving everything to God, to give self completely over to God. But if we ever did, that wouldn't make us extraordinary. We've only done what we were commanded to do. So that we need to have this mindset when it comes to service. Now let's go to John chapter 13. Christ gives a living illustration of service. What we read here again, as we said Sunday night, through chapter 14, verse 31, because in chapter 14, 31, we see them leaving. What we read here takes place in a large upper room of a divinely chosen house that had already been prepared for the Passover. Notice in, we'll come back to John 13, but notice Luke 22. Luke chapter 22. Begin reading verse 8. And he sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat." And they said unto him, "Where wilt thou that we prepare?" And he said unto them, this is a very unusual, whose house should we do this in? And here's what he said. "Behold, when ye are entered into the city," that would be Jerusalem, "there in the city, a man meet you." And this man is going to be carrying a pitcher of water. And I want you to follow him into the house where he entered in. This is sovereignty. "And ye shall say to the good man of the house, the master saith unto thee, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he shall show you a large upper room furnished. There, make ready the Passover. And they went and found as he had said unto them." Isn't that amazing? That's how it always is. "And they made ready the Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 disciples with him." And then back in John chapter 13, we see what took place in that upper room. In our text, Jesus, just before he would be arrested, just before he would go to the cross, is gathered with the apostles in this upper room of this particular house. To set the scene, they arrive at the house, not necessarily all at the same time. I'm sure they arrived at different intervals. They arrive at the house. They would have to climb some stairs to get into the upper room. As they enter this upper room, at the door is a basin, and there is a towel. That is for the purpose of washing feet. This, of course, again, was necessary because the people in those days wore sandals and they walked dusty roads. The custom was to greet your house guest by washing their feet. This would have been done at times by the host himself. But usually it was done by a servant, usually the lowest of servants. If a man was not wealthy enough to have servants, his wife or his children would do this job. Or if a man did not have a wife or children, of course, he would do the job. It's much like you and I, we greet visitors at our house. We offer to take their coat and hang it up. In those days, they got down on their knees and they washed the person's feet. So each apostle enters this upper room. They can see the basin. They can see the towel. They know what it's there for. The fact is, Peter and John should have made arrangements for someone to wash the feet. But they didn't. So, they each pass this basin. They each pass this towel. They each see the basin. They each see the towel. But there's no one to wash their feet. So what do? They proceed. Each of the 12 taking their place at the table. Now in those days, the table would have only been 12 to 18 inches above the ground. And people actually reclined at the table. You would kind of lay on your side and eat from the table. So that's the picture that we get. All these paintings are inaccurate, but that's not even important. So there they are, reclined at that table. And then we read of Jesus doing to these apostles something that was truly remarkable, something absolutely stunning, something that would be almost unbelievable to your eyes. And what he does is an example and an illustration to them and to us concerning service. In verses 4 and 5, we see the example of Jesus. And in verses 4 and 5, Jesus did seven things. Seven acts of Jesus are recorded in verses 4 and 5. And there is a very definite order to these seven acts. Number one, it says that he riseth from supper. He gets up from the table. Everyone else remains at the table. Jesus riseth from supper. He left the comfort of the table. No one will ever serve the Lord or one another like we ought until we're willing to leave our comfort zones. Jesus rose from the table. Secondly, it says he laid aside his garments. He took off his outer robe. Why? Because it would have gotten in the way. It would have got in the way of what he was intending to do. So he took off his outer robe. In order to serve God, in order to minister to one another, we must be willing and able to lay aside whatever gets in the way. The problem we have today is that there's a lot of things in the way, and people are picking up more and more and more to get in the way. That's the society we live in. But if we're going to serve, we have to be willing to lay aside whatever gets in the way. The problem today is many have a full plate of activity, and they just keep stacking on that plate. Well, brother, you know I would if no, we really don't know. I would if. And then what follows is something they have to do. And 99% of the time, it is stuff that they have added into their lives. And they no longer have time to serve God. or to serve one another. And they are not about to lay aside whatever it is that gets in the way. So we must be willing to lay aside. The third thing he did was he took a towel. The fourth thing that he did, he girded himself. That is, he took that towel and he wrapped it around his waist. He girded himself. He would have tucked it in his garment. So there's the towel. The fifth thing he did was he poureth water into a basin. Now notice again, the order is specific. He riseth from supper, verse 4. He laid aside his garments. He took a towel and girded himself. And then it says, after that, after he did those four things, he did a fifth thing. He poured water into a basin. Now this also was the work of a servant. John chapter 2, verses 5 through 7, when Jesus turned the water to wine. Remember, Mary said to the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. And what did Jesus tell the servants to do? Fill them up with water. Fill the jugs, six jugs, with water. It was a servile work. So these five acts. He rose from supper. He laid aside his garments. He took a towel. He girded himself with the towel. And he poured water into a basin. Those five acts were done with intent and purpose to do what needed to be done. All five of those acts was in preparation of the main act, which is the next one. These five acts speak of readiness. He was making himself ready to do what needed to be done. These five acts speaks of being prepared. He was preparing himself. He was making preparations to do what needed to be done. And then the sixth act, and began to wash the disciples' feet. Again, they're each kind of lying on their side at this table. And Jesus would stoop down and begin to wash their feet. This is amazing. The one who uses the heavens as his throne and the earth as his footstool, the one who holds in his heart hands the hearts of kings, and at his bidding, nations come and go. The great I Am, the one who is without beginning and end, the source of all things, the one by whom all things consist. He kneels down. He takes the position of a servant. And we need to just stop. And we need to get a picture in our mind. God Himself stooping to wash the feet of the apostles. The dirty feet of the apostles. If we're going to serve, we must be willing to stoop. Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm no one's doormat. No, and you're not a servant either. Because a servant, you have to be willing to be the doormat. Our thinking needs to change. Our thinking needs to change. So there he is, stooped down. He stoops down, he's on his knees, and he reaches forth and takes that foot, puts it in his hand, and again begins to wash that dirty foot. So there he is, kneeling down. He reaches forth, took those dirty and grimy feet into his hands. May I say, holy and pure hands. Never has there been more pure hands than the hands of Christ. And those dirty feet are in his hands. And he began to wash the feet. Now think about it. The very ones. He is washing the feet of the very ones that he knew in just a few short hours would deny him and desert him. So you see, we can't even go there and say, well, I would, but they've never done anything for me. And let me tell you all the bad things they've done. Don't even go there. Because Jesus, God Himself, took the dirty feet of these individuals that He knew in just a few short hours would deny Him and forsake Him. And He's washing their feet. This is a servant. This is a servant. It is a picture. It is an act of humility. Why should Jesus take into his hands dirty, smelly feet? It is an act of humility. He's giving us an object lesson. But it is not only an act of humility. It is an act of long suffering. How many times, followed through the Gospels, how many times has Jesus rebuked these apostles? Rebuked them over and over and over, and they just didn't get it many times. But there he is washing their feet. Again, he knows they're going to betray him. But he's long-suffering. It is a picture of humility. It is a picture of long-suffering. It is a picture of forbearance. And we must do the same if we're ever going to serve. Well, I'll never do anything for so-and-so because... And the list goes on. Child of God ought to be fearful to even go there. When you picture what's before us here. And how many times when we have disobeyed Him, He has reached forth and ministered to us. How many times He has taken our dirty feet, our dirty life, placed it in His own hands and washed it over and over. Is a picture of forbearance. Is a picture of love. It's a picture of grace. It is a picture of mercy. Jesus washing these feet. And then the seventh thing that he did, it says that he wiped them with the towel. What that simply means is he didn't leave the work unfinished. He not only washed their feet, he dried them. He had that towel girded. He went around each one. And I believe even washed Judas Iscariot's feet. We know he washed Peter's feet. And he knew Peter was about to deny him three times. He washed their feet and then he wiped them with a towel. What's the foundation of all of this? What's the basis? It goes back to verse 1. Having loved his own, he loved them unto the end. What Jesus did, he did because he loved them. Because he loved them. That's why he did what he did. After Jesus did what he did, notice verse 34 and verse 35. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this kind of love, shall all men know that ye are my disciples. Because this isn't in man naturally. If ye have love one to another. So what Jesus did in washing their feet was out of love. It proceeded from his love for them. Love is the foundation of service to God. Love is also the foundation of service to one another. He said in John 14 and verse 15, he said, if you love me, keep my commandments. That is, love's the foundation. We ought to obey God because we love him. Not because the church says you have to, you ought to obey him because you love him. Not because there's something in it for you, you ought to obey him because you love him. Love must be the foundation. It's also the foundation of service to one another. Again, we already referred to Galatians 5 verse 13, by love serve one another. And we see Paul states the supremacy of love in 1 Corinthians 13 verses 1 through 3. And verse 13. So what he did was out of love. Also what he did was a priority. In verses 2 and 3 of John 13, the devil has entered into the heart of Judas Iscariot. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he was come from God and went to God. In other words, important matters were at hand. Jesus still had to be arrested and lay down his life upon a cross. There was still plenty to do. But he took the time to wash the feet of the apostles. It was still a priority of his to minister to these people. Again, we have to get back to realizing the purpose of our life. And the purpose of our life is far greater than personal fulfillment. It is far greater than peace of mind. Far greater than our own happiness. Our purpose in life is greater than our family, greater than our career, greater than all other ambitions that we might have, greater than all other goals. Service is to be the priority. That's to be the priority. After washing their feet, Jesus said unto them in verse 12, know ye what I have done to you? And the simple answer would be, well, yeah, Lord, you washed our feet. No, what Jesus did went far beyond washing the feet. What Jesus did goes beyond having their needs met. What Jesus did is about a mindset. It is about becoming something. It is about becoming a servant. And Jesus then drove that point home in verse 13. After he asked the question, know ye what I have done to you? Doesn't wait for an answer. He says, ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, well, for so I am. So he's saying, you have correctly put me upon the pedestal of Lord and Master. And he went on to say, if I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet. So yes, you have correctly put me on the pedestal of Lord and Master. But I'm willing to step off of that pedestal to wash your feet. And then he went on, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. Since I, the Lord and Master, am willing to wash your feet, shouldn't you be willing to stoop and wash one another's feet? In verse 15, for I have given you an example. I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. Now, a lot of denominations will use that verse to back up foot washing services. And by the way, in most foot washing services, people know beforehand. And what do? Before they come to church, and make sure their feet are clean. It kind of defeats the whole purpose. But what Jesus is saying here in verse 15, do as I have done to you. He did something more than just wash their feet. Now, I know some will take this wrong, but that's all right. If someone needs their feet to be washed, we ought to be willing to wash them. Nothing wrong with that. But Jesus did something more than just wash their feet. He gave an example. He gave an object lesson in service. And we are to do as he has done. Lastly, if we turn to Philippians chapter 2. So we see Jesus has given us an object lesson of service. In Philippians 2, Paul is encouraging the Philippian church in verse 2 through 4 to be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. And then he directed their attention to Jesus Christ. In other words, if you're going to do this, you need to pay attention to Jesus. Verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. He said, I want you to be like-minded. I want you to have the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. How do you do that? You have the same mind of Jesus. You're willing, and he goes on and he talks about how Christ was willing to empty himself and to become a servant. There are a lot of things that would never happen in a church if people were simply willing to lay aside their opinion and to stoop and to wash someone's feet. That's how you have like-mindedness. That's how you have one accord. You have the mind of Christ. And may I say, no one served God or man encountering more opposition than Jesus Christ. No one. No one was more misunderstood than Jesus Christ. No one was more misrepresented than Jesus Christ. No one was more criticized than Jesus Christ. And do you realize today, I know people like to, and I'm talking about safe people, they'd like to convince themselves that it's not so, but I'm here to tell you it is. If Jesus Christ were to pastor or to be a member of a Baptist church, he would be the most misunderstood person in that church. He would be the most misrepresented person in that church, and he'd be the most criticized person in that church. That's the truth. Yet, he served anyway. So it just doesn't fly. Well, I'm not going back there anymore. You know what those people did? That doesn't work. Because no one was more criticized, more misrepresented, more misunderstood, faced more opposition than Jesus Christ. Yet he served anyway. He just kept on serving. Why? Because that's what he was here for. He knew that he came to do the Father's business. And the very moment that truth gets a hold of our hearts, I am here to serve God, we'll be different people. Be a different people. That's what's to define us. I am here to serve God. I'm not here to work a career. I'm not here to do this. We are here to serve God. Now, God will use us to serve in careers and all kinds of things, but our purpose is to serve God. And when that gets a hold of us, that's why we're here. We'll truly serve Him. We'll truly be willing. There's a brother, there's a sister, they need their feet washed. That's what I'm here for. That's what we're here for. And you realize that. So you stoop and you wash their feet. Well, they're just going to spit in my face. You stoop and you wash their feet. That's what Jesus did. And he left us an example. Brother Jim, if you come and lead us in verse song.